versus Ortega Galvin. Mr. Beals.
Good morning, Your Honors. May I please the court? Just to give a brief overview of the facts of the case, the central issue in this case here is a past wrong that has present very dire consequences. The appellant, Mr. Ortega Galvin, entered a guilty plea on July 11th of last year. After the guilty plea, a PSR was generated where the stated range was 57 to 71 months. That was based on an offense level of 21 and a criminal history category of 4. A large part of the offense category level was a 16-point enhancement due to a felony conviction back in 2006 for criminal sexual abuse. The felony conviction in 2006 stemmed from conduct from November of 2005, when, in fact, Mr. Ortega Galvin was actually only 16 years of age, and therefore...
Okay, Mr. Beals, and that's the key of your case. I have difficulty understanding how this is not a collateral attack on that conviction.
Well, Your Honor, in this situation, it's one of those situations where there's sort of a conflict between the duty of defense counsel to argue mitigating factors under 3553. The first factor under 3553 is the nature of the offense and the characteristics of the defendant. In this case here, because a valid birth certificate from Mexico was presented regarding Mr. Ortega Galvin, it would have been a abrogation of duty not to raise that issue with the court. So
you move to continue the federal sentencing and go to the state court to present what evidence there is that conviction was entered in error. That seems to me to be the route you should have gone.
Well, in that case, and I guess hindsight is always 20/20, but in that situation there, as appointed counsel, it was appointed for the federal case, and I don't think the appointment didn't cover going in and collaterally attacking a state conviction.
Well, likewise, the sentencing court doesn't have authority to look past that conviction, the record of that conviction.
No, the state court doesn't, and that's the reason why in the sentencing memo that was submitted, that's the reason why the argument was not necessarily for a departure, downward departure in the actual calculations, but an actual forvariance.
Right. And so the sentencing judge considered your arguments and concluded that the criminal history category was overstated, which resulted in a substantial reduction in the guideline range that your client faced.
Well, it did result in a reduction in the guideline range. However, because a central theme of the argument was that the guideline range itself was patently unreasonable based on a conviction that never should have occurred, there still was the argument in front of the court that the district court ignored regarding the argument for the variance.
My difficulty is that district court had no authority to ignore that conviction. That conviction was of record. It was a felony conviction. It was for the statutory rape with a difference of 5 years in the ages. And so I think the sentencing court is stuck with that.
Well, in fact, the sentencing court is stuck with the range as it's calculated, federal sentencing guideline range as it's calculated. The sentencing court is not bound to sentence based on that range. The sentencing court is required on 3553 to make sure that the range was properly calculated, in which case, under the PSR, it was presented, and the calculation of the range, there was no objection made to the calculation of the range because it was the proper calculations under the circumstances. However, the sentencing court did have authority to vary from the range, and there was, and in this case, there is no statutory minimum. So the district court was in a position to sentence the appellant to whatever sentence that the district court deemed reasonable. And the district court made it clear on the record that in its discretion, it felt that sentencing some time in prison was warranted based on the characteristics. However, the issue is not so much that the appellant was sentenced to time in prison. The issue is the amount of time in prison, considering all of the factors presented and the fact that this was a blatant wrong, the conviction was blatantly wrong, and the court did have an ability to look at all the characteristics and could have easily have sentenced Mr. Ortega Galvan to a much lesser sentence, and also did not.
Would your argument be the same if your client had shown up with a birth certificate for the victim of the prior conviction that showed her to be above the age of 16, or let's say within 5 years of the age of your client? Would your argument be the same, that conviction should not have been considered?
The argument would be the same. It would be similar.
The judge can look behind a conviction.
Well, it's not so much the sentencing judge can look behind the conviction. The sentencing judge has the ability under 3553 to look at the factors and the characteristics of the defendant in sentencing. And what the calculation, the sentencing guidelines calculation is supposed to take everything into account, including the criminal history background. And which is a part of the
wasn't that done when the judge gave the accommodation on the criminal history, reducing it 2 levels?
Well, I would argue that it was not done, since the argument is, one, that the district court committed procedural error, which is reviewed de novo, when it effectively gave an inconsistent ruling. It said it was, well, the birth certificate raise enough doubt to reduce the criminal history category, but it didn't really address the issue of the patently unreasonable sentencing range. The district court didn't go on to say, well, the sentencing range in this case is appropriate because of this reason, this reason, this reason, even though a huge chunk, quite frankly, the majority of the chunk of the sentencing range is based on a conviction that really should not have been there but for some mistakes back in 2006. And then that, which also leads to the presumption of what it appears to be that the district court, the reason for that is that the district court presumed that the guideline range was reasonable. And the last argument, we do believe that the sentencing court abused its discretion in sentencing Mr. Ortega Galvan to 41 months or 3.5 years in light of the 3553 factors. Once again, going back to if that conviction isn't a part of that calculation, he's looking at a range of 0 to 6 months as opposed to 3.5 years. And with the fact that the district court had discretion to sentence him to well below 3.5 years and still would have met some of the issues that the district court raised regarding recidivism and so forth, we believe that it was unreasonable in light of those factors. Unless there's any other questions from your honors, I would like to reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Okay, that's fine, Mr. Beal. So, Mr. Fitter?
May it please the court, Seth B. Fitter on behalf of the United States. I'd just like to address a couple of issues that were raised by...
What about this guideline provisions that says that you increase the punishment by 16 levels if the conviction receives criminal history points, or by 12 if it doesn't. So when she eliminated criminal history points from his sexual offense, shouldn't he have just raised it by 12 levels and not 16?
Well, I think the court, I think Judge Posner, you're referring to a sentencing guideline which came into effect after this case.
Really?
Was this, oh. Yes, I'm sorry. That came into place in November of. So that doesn't really apply in this case, if I may say.
It does say November 11th, 2011. Is that the amendment that added it?
The amendment came into play November 30th of 2011.
But you're sure this doesn't apply to...
No, that doesn't apply.
Okay.
If I may just continue, the district court did not resolve the age discrepancy issue. And even though there was it did not resolve the age discrepancy issue. But the court did, as counsel indicated, reduce the criminal history category from Category 4 to Category 2. And, in fact, she was not stuck with the guidelines. The guideline was originally 57 to 71 months range. And then when she decreased it to two levels to Category 2, it went from 41 to 51 months. And then the district court gave... sentenced him to the low end of that range of 41 months. The district court was not bound and not required to decrease the offense level in this case, and it did not do so. In fact, the district court considered the fact that the defendant was deported twice, once in 2006 and again in March of 2008, and came back in both times. Therefore, there was no error in this case. The judge did not abuse his discretion, and therefore we're asking that this court affirm the decision.
Is it the government's position that the district court can go behind the fact of the conviction after the guidelines range is calculated to consider the actual offense conduct of the predicate offense to evaluate under the 3553 calculus what the appropriate sentence should be?
The court could do that. In fact, it did do that.
Well, not really. What the judge did was sort of analyze this as though we were still under the old system and engage in a downward departure. And I'm not sure that's the right way to think about this.
Well, I think what the
judge can do anything nowadays, right?
Right, the court,
Booker, so...
And it did. It did.
Wants to say it wasn't a crime. It's not an important crime. It's. I guess you could have given her a lower sentence.
That's absolutely correct. It could have. And obviously, if she did, if we wouldn't be here today. But the bottom line is, she wanted to make sure that the defendant would not return to the United States illegally, as he did two times in the past. But at responding to your question, Judge Sykes. Yes, the judge could have done that, and I think she did partially. In other words, she didn't do it on the offense level, but
right.
she basically cut the baby in half. She gave some of it to defend it, and not all everything.
Right, it was a split the difference kind of a
exactly.
kind of a ruling. But as a methodological matter, which is what I'm concerned about,
mm-hmm.
You can't collaterally attack a predicate conviction that's used to increase an offense level or a criminal history score for purposes of the guidelines. That's very clear. And it seems like everybody recognized that. So technically, the new information about the defendant's age when he committed the prior sex offense can't be used for a quote-unquote downward departure either, right?
Correct.
If we were under the old system. And so we, I think, should be discouraging that sort of methodological approach to these sorts of issues because it does look, for all intents and purposes, like a collateral attack on the underlying conviction as opposed to a qualitative analysis of what actually was going on in the earlier crime, which is perfectly appropriate under 3553, right?
That's correct.
So you would agree with that as a methodological matter?
And as Judge Tinder said, the defendant could have, if he wanted to, say, you know what, I just got this information, let's stop everything, let's go back to state court, let's do it the right way.
Right.
But they decided not to do that, basically. If there are no more questions, the government respectfully requests this court to affirm the decision of the district court.
Okay, thank you, Mr.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Beals?
Your Honor, I just want to address a couple of things. First, regarding stopping the sentencing and going to state court, as I mentioned before, hindsight's always 20/20, but there's also a practical matter as well. Mr. Ortega Galvan was in custody the entire time. So to have asked for an indefinite postponement of the sentencing hearing, and then to go into the state court and start to then seek permission, because as appointed counsel was only appointed for the federal matter, to seek permission to go into state court, receive permission, go into state court, start the process to collaterally attack, the process that could have taken months, maybe even possibly years, as a practical matter, Mr. Ortega Galvan could have spent more time, received more time in actual federal custody going through that process than the actual time that he was sentenced to. Now, regarding the methodological process.
The problem is, can a defendant in sentencing ask the judge to reexamine the basis of the defendant's previous criminal convictions?
Well, Your Honor, this seems sort of
straightforward because of the birth certificate, but the implication, isn't it, that, yeah, you can always ask the judge and say, look, I have these convictions, but if you look into them, you'll see they were wrongful. There wasn't any evidence. I was railroaded, so you ought to give me a break. And that is, collaterally attacking those previous. You're collaterally attacking in the sense that it's not a complete collateral attack. It doesn't lead to an expungement, but it eliminates one of the collateral consequences of the conviction, right, which is the recidivist effect. So it is a collateral attack, and it does seem to go against the general federal policy about not allowing collateral attacks except through the prescribed procedures for them. Have to go to the state first, habeas corpus, what have you.
I see my time is up, Your Honor. If it pleases the court, I would like to answer. in this case, Mr. Ortega Galvan's case is a very unique case regarding the collateral attack
situation. Well, it's unique, yes, but on the other hand, you can't draw a line between cases where the erroneous character of a conviction is shown by a birth certificate and other cases where it requires a witness, maybe two witnesses. And where do you stop?
Well, in this case, I think it begins and stops with the appellate situation, where it's not a process where you're bringing in witnesses, as Your Honor mentioned, but it's a very cut-and-dry, binary situation. Where either he was too old or young enough.
This is the clear case, but how do you separate that from the messy cases which will come in its train, right? Next case, maybe there'll be an argument about the birth certificate. And then the case after that, no birth certificate, but there's other evidence.
Well, in those other cases, by the very fact that they could be deemed as messy, that would show that they would...
Well, it's kind of not a very nice line to say clean cases you can reduce the person's sentence, messy cases, no.
Well, Your Honor, I wouldn't use the term actual messy in this regard, but...
Right? Even if it's not the term.
Well, no, it is similar to almost like summary judgment. If there's a dispute, then there shouldn't be a collateral attack, because a part of the collateral attack is you have another judge or another finder of fact that's making a determination after that determination has been found.
Okay.
Whereas in this case here, a central tenet of the conviction can't stand if it's shown that the person could not under any circumstances.
That's a better distinction, yeah.
So
between what's disputable and indisputable. Okay, well, thank you very much. So, were you appointed?
Yes, Your Honor.
Well, we thank you for your vigorous efforts on behalf of your client. We thank Mr. Fitter as well.
And just for the record, I would have just asked that the court would remand the case for resentencing. Thank you.
Okay.